Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi says the Congressional Black Caucus will announce new legislation next week to address police brutality and racial profiling. This comes on the heels of days of continuous protests across the country sparked by the death of George Floyd. But is this a moment in history that will actually lead to meaningful legislation? Joining us now is Guy Uriel Charles, who is professor at Duke University School of Law and the co-director of the Duke Law Center on Law, Race, and Politics. Guy, welcome back.
Thank you. Wonderful to be back.
Well, and have you been surprised at all by the energy that has grown behind the protest movements and how quickly it has ramped up after the police killing of George Floyd?
You know, to some extent, Jeremy, I have. Obviously, I have not been surprised that these events have taken place. But as you said, the energy, its speed, especially in a moment of pandemic, where there are worries about health, but people have overcome those worries because this seems to be an inflection point. This moment seems to be a very different moment. It reminds me of the 64 civil rights moment, the 63, the civil rights movement, where people said enough is enough, and they demanded change. And that seems to be what we're seeing today.
And they got change in the form of the Civil Rights Act. Just remind us what the importance of that act was. What did it do?
Well, we had two fundamentally important acts, the 64 Civil Rights Act and the 65 Voting Rights Act. And if you want to use the 65 Voting Rights as an example, the impetus for it was the violence from the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where the civil rights marchers were marching for voting equality, and they wanted to go to the Capitol in Montgomery, Alabama, and they were met with violence by the police. And when people saw that on their television screens, they said, you know, we can no longer have the type of racial discrimination in voting that we've had historically in this country, and they demanded change. So they united with the civil rights movement, and we got change in the form of the Voting Rights Act that made discrimination, it was already illegal under the Constitution, but it enforced the Constitution and brought in the southern states who were the major discriminators to make sure that black people and people of color can vote without discrimination.
So why do you think that it's this moment that is comparable to what was happening back in the early 60s and not the moment immediately following Michael Brown or Eric Garner or Freddie Gray or Sandra Bland? Why is it George Floyd? What was it about that that really changed everything?
You know, there's something about watching that video and watching a police officer, a person's own government, put his knee on the neck of a helpless individual, and that individual saying, I can't breathe, and the officer callously and indifferently ignoring the cries. There was no reason for it, and the life being sucked out of that man, that I think at a point in which society reaches and they said, we have seen too many of these things, enough is enough. But there's something about that video that is particularly callous. And the cumulative effects of seeing similar things, at some point in time, something was going to galvanize this nation. And it seemed that this is the straw that broke the camel's back. It is particularly unnerving. It is particularly disturbing. And if one does not look at that video and say, a human being can't take the life of another human being by using the force of the state, then there's something that's missing inside of us. And I think people here said, we are fellow human beings and we want to make commonality with our fellow human beings, irrespective of their race, their class, their region.
Well, I have to say, as I've been thinking about that moment over the last week, and I am a white man, I've never been arrested by the police, but I think there would be greater odds of you and I being on two planes that crash into each other than me doing anything that caused a police officer to do that to me, to do to me what he did to George Floyd, which sort of shows you the difference in the system of justice in this country for black and brown people versus for white people.
This is exactly right, and we're seeing it. It's hard, I think, for most white people to imagine the experiences that black people have. I was talking to my father recently, and we were just telling stories about our experiences. Every single Black person has multiple stories, and it's not an exaggeration. And the research bears this out on the racial disparities on stops, racial disparities on arrests, racial disparities in harassment. And it is hard for most whites to believe, but when you see something like that and to think that if you're a white person, it wouldn't happen to your son or your daughter or another person who is white. It is the story and the habitual act that people of color have to live with on a relatively daily basis. And I think that turns something in each and every single one of us, no matter what our race or location is, if we are decent human beings.
What is your reaction to the upgraded charge against the Minneapolis police officer who held his knee on George Floyd's neck, leading to his death, and the charges brought against the three officers who did not intervene while that happened?
Well, the first thing that we are seeing, and this is again why this moment may be different. First of all, we are now seeing prosecutions, that charges are being brought, that serious charges are being brought. And I think not only does it send a message, but it is also an important step in the justice system. Now we need to see juries routinely apply the facts and the evidence to the law, and where appropriate, to hold people accountable, to convict them based upon the law and based upon the facts, and not based upon bias. And so for me, seeing these charges brought, seeing serious charges brought, which communicate that the Attorney General and Minnesota is determined to see justice served here. So I was encouraged by what I saw, and I'm guessing the country is encouraged by what they saw, not only seeing charges brought, but those charges being serious and upgraded to reflect the gravity of the situation in a way that meets both the facts of what happened as well as the law.
You have a history in the state of Minnesota. You were at the University of Minnesota Law School for many years. Do you think that there's something about what happened happening in that state, in the North, not in the South, that changes it for people?
I have to say that it surprised me to see that it is Minnesota. So I think that this is a very important point, that one can't simply say it's the South, or that one can't simply say this is a backwards region. What I think Minnesota displays, and it's consistent with the experience of Black people wherever they find themselves, that there is racism. Racism is embedded throughout parts of our country. That doesn't mean we haven't made progress. We have. But you can't assume that simply because it's the North or it's the West or it can only happen in the South, because that's not true. It's not consistent with our history and it's not consistent with our experience. And so it did surprise me a little bit that Minnesota was the catalyst. It didn't surprise me that this happened in Minnesota, but it did surprise me that it was Minnesota that was the catalyst. And maybe in some respects, it demonstrates that this happens everywhere, that Black people are subject to the police state wherever they find themselves in this country.
So this is happening 5 months before an election, and it does seem like some are trying to harness the energy of the protest and get people to vote. You see a lot of social media posts end with the word vote. You study voting rights. You talked about the Voting Rights Act of 1965. What do you think will come out of what's happening right now?
What has to come out of protest politics is legislation. Now, this is very difficult in this particular moment. First of all, some states have imposed or have not made it easy for people to vote, especially in the midst and worries about a pandemic. The honest reality, the party that is most likely to adopt reform, at least at the federal level, are the Democrats, and they don't control Congress, and they certainly don't control the presidency. And so clearly political change will have to happen if these issues are to be dealt with at the federal level. And some of them can be dealt with at the state level. So it is important for people to get out and vote. It is important for people to overcome the barriers because the political process is the engine of political change. So protest politics is a prelude to the types of political process changes that people want to see. So that way, this moment, in fact, matters. So it is true that these protests seem to be very different. It's galvanizing a group of young, multiracial people who are saying enough is enough. But it's not going to change if it doesn't lead to legislation at the state level as well as at the federal level.
That is Guy Uriel Charles, who is professor of law at Duke University School of Law and the co-director of the Duke Law Center on Law, Race, and Politics. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, for having me.